Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. Melania Trump is human, and that's okay. Last night, the First Lady was supposed to make her first campaign appearance since the speech from the White House at the Republican convention. But she canceled at the last minute because she's still too sick from COVID-19, specifically coughing too much. She's allowed. She's a person, not Superwoman. Unlike her husband, apparently, at an Arizona campaign rally on Monday, the president said this about being hospitalized with COVID.
But I woke up and I felt good. I said, get me out of here. Boom, Superman. Through Operation Warp Speed, we will have 100 million vaccine doses before the end of the year, and our military is going to distribute them, and they are, there's nobody like our military.
So they were chanting Superman after he called himself Superman. But President Superman made no reference to his human wife's condition. Why not? Would the chanting crowd consider her weak? Would it blow his premise that COVID is no big thing? Would it make the in-person, close-together, largely unmasked crowd at his daily rallies start to question whether it was safe to be there like that? Is he purposely using people's trust to put them at risk for a big crowd photo op? And while cases are surging again and scientists are warning people against big family gatherings for Thanksgiving and Christmas, Trump is telling his crowds this week things like this.
People are tired of COVID. I have the biggest rallies I've ever had, and we have COVID. People are saying, whatever, just leave us alone. They're tired of it. People are tired of hearing Fauci and all these idiots.
Fauci and all these idiots, he said to a group of supporters and reporters on a conference call. And about Joe Biden, he mockingly said this.
If you vote for Biden, he will surrender your jobs to China. He will surrender your future to the virus. He's going to lock down. This guy wants to lock down. He'll listen to the scientists.
He'll listen to the scientists with the mocking tone. On that note, we welcome Dr. Eric Rubin, editor-in-chief of the New England Journal of Medicine. He is also chair of the Immunology and Infectious Disease Department at the Harvard T.H. Chan School of Public Health. For the first time in its 208-year history, the New England Journal of Medicine is urging Americans to vote against a specific presidential candidate. Dr. Rubin, thanks very much for giving us some time today. Welcome to WNYC.
Thanks for having me, Brian.
So the Journal has never endorsed a political candidate before. What started you discussing the possibility? Was there an event or a moment?
Well, first I want to be careful. We didn't endorse anyone. We just suggested that our readers vote against people. And there wasn't really a moment which precipitated all of this. It was really an accumulation of lots of things. You know, we kind of see our job as communicators. We're trying to get the information out there that decision makers can use. And we try to support those decision makers in making those very tough choices, as has to be done now. But we felt like we weren't being heard. We as a community of scientists and researchers weren't being heard on this. And since there was an election upcoming, we thought that the only solution for that was to replace our leadership.
As you say, the Journal did not explicitly endorse Joe Biden. You only urge people to vote against Trump. You said of the Trump administration, we should not abet them and enable the deaths of thousands more Americans by allowing them to keep their jobs. Why did you stop there?
Well, we're not arguing that someone else would do better. We're just wanted to call out the incredible and reckless incompetence of our leaders right now. And I think we were a little broader in our criticism. We weren't just criticizing the federal administration. I think the criticisms we have could be leveled against the legislators and governors, some of them. And we wanted to point out that this has been a disaster and our leaders aren't working for us. and we really need to think about what kind of leadership we need in a crisis like this one.
You know, the Trump campaign says for all Biden's language about a national response, the actual pandemic policies he's running on are pretty much the same as Trump's. Have you looked closely enough to have an opinion on whether that's true?
All I can say is what has been implemented. I haven't looked at policy positions, but clearly what we're doing now is a disorganized and inconsistent response. It's not what we need.
Well, you criticized the federal government in the editorial for largely abandoning disease control to the states. Taking that idea forward, what kind of national response would you like to see now to respond to the increases that we're seeing in most places at this time?
I think we know what works, and it's not a new message. What works are simple, straightforward public health measures, masking and social distancing, quarantine and isolation, testing and contact tracing. And I don't think we're doing well in any of those categories. Now, remember, any one of those by itself isn't enough. There's a package of responses that work. But they really work. If you look at countries that have done a very good job of implementing them, they're doing far better than we are. And by not doing these things aren't that hard. By not doing them, that's already led to a large number of excess deaths, and people are continuing to die, in many of them unnecessarily.
Why is the virus also surging again now in Europe, which does not have a denying Donald among the prime ministers that I know of?
I think that if you look at Europe, there are a couple of issues there. One is that there is also inconsistent leadership there. And part of that comes from individuals, and part of that comes from an inability to really set policies that are strong. And the other problem is the same one that we have in the U.S. Each country sets its own public health agenda, for the most part. And so you can't do that much better than your neighbor when there's free travel across Europe as there is right now.
You write an interesting thing about testing. We have very large numbers of tests per day at this point, but a useful metric is number of tests per infected person, which puts us way down below such places as Zimbabwe and Kazakhstan, are the two examples you cite. Why is that number important, number of tests per infected person?
Well, I think giving an absolute number of tests is kind of meaningless. We're a big country, and we have the largest burden of disease. To figure out how to prevent disease, we have to identify people who are infected, and our numbers of infected are much more than most countries. So we just need a lot more testing. And I re-emphasize, testing is not complicated. It's something that we should have invested in early. We continue to under-invest in. And right now, there are many parts of the country where it's still difficult to get a test, and the results come back very late. If you get your test back 5 days after you've had it, it's pretty worthless. It's not very helpful for you, and it doesn't help disease control in any way.
Now, your editorial says instead of relying on expertise, the administration has turned to charlatans who promulgate outright lies. In that context, if there is a Trump policy advisor on coronavirus right now, and we heard the reports that he doesn't meet with Dr. Fauci anymore, doesn't meet with Dr. Birx anymore, it appears that it's this Dr. Scott Atlas, who's not a virus or infectious disease expert. He's a neuroradiologist, and Twitter this week took down a post of his for being COVID disinformation. The tweet said, "Masks work." No, Twitter took that down. And when he was appointed by the president recently, 78 of his former colleagues at the Stanford University Medical School wrote an open letter in which they asserted that many of Atlas's opinions, quote, run counter to established science, unquote. Besides claiming masks don't work, he appears to endorse a herd immunity approach that keeps society open and lets the virus spread in the community, except for trying to protect groups of people deemed vulnerable to severe cases. My question for you is, where's the line between charlatanism, which of course we don't want, and a dissenting scientific interpretation, which is something you would want?
So I think you bring up Dr. Fauci's name, and I think that's really important because the federal government has a very large repository of great science, of excellent scientists. And in the institution, some of which have been heavily criticized, like the including the NIH, which hasn't been so much criticized, but the FDA, the CDC, the staff there are still outstanding. And they are producing useful information, the highest quality information. Now, ultimately, policymakers have to make policy decisions. Those are not, that's not really the purview of experts. And so any president would have to process that information and make decisions based on it. But to ignore that advice, to call the infectious, I'm an infectious disease physician, and I will tell you, Tony Fauci is the leader. We don't really have anyone comparable to him in this country, in my area. To call him an idiot, to ignore advice like that, and turn to someone whose advice you just, whose opinion you like more, even if it's not informed, really, again, it goes back to the basic premise. There's a leadership vacuum here. We're in the middle of a crisis that's comparable to a war, and our leadership is making decisions based on what they like to hear rather than what's true. It's just not it's an extremely dangerous situation, and it's already costing us tremendously.
Dr. Eric Rubin, Editor-in-Chief of the New England Journal of Medicine, thank you for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Brian.